Yeah, I know then farmers take flatbed trailers and put them.
Monday, December 13, Dakota County Board of Commissioners meeting at 3 o'clock. Dakota County Board of Equalization meeting at 3:30 p.m.
I don't know what happened up there in South Dakota. That culvert I thought was ours. So it's easy for him.
I never know unless they see numbers moving.
Yeah, you know, some people live there. They're just, you know, there's no place like home.
I'll call this meeting to order, and we'll begin with our Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Roll call, please.
Janet Gill.
Here.
Scott Love. Robert Giese.
Here.
Larry Albanicious.
Here.
Troy Lonsby.
Here.
Has anybody heard from Scott?
I haven't.
He sent a text. He's late. He's a flight somewhere. I don't know where he's coming from. But
okay.
I just got it.
Okay. He's out of town then and didn't get back in time.
Yeah.
He will be coming.
Said he won't make it.
Oh.
Said he won't make it.
Won't make it. Okay.
So.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to excuse him then.
I'll second that. Okay. So Bob and Larry. All right. Do we need to vote on that, or are we? Okay. And we can. It's been moved and seconded to excuse Scott due to flight issues.
Robert.
Yes.
Larry.
Yes.
Troy.
Yes.
Janet.
Yes. Okay. A current copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted on the west wall near the entrance of the county board meeting and is available for review for all citizens in attendance. At this point, we move to item one on the agenda, which is our public comment period. The commissioners reserve the right to adjust the order of items on this agenda if necessary. And the public comment should be limited to any item that is not on the agenda. And we have the discretion to limit the time of the comment. Usually that I set that at 2 to 3 minutes. So does anybody have any public comment on an item not on the agenda? Yes, come on up. And
sure.
Yep.
How's everyone?
Good.
Hello.
Good.
I'm Ron Harnett. I live in Dakota City. And I'm just curious about the carbon capture, and I've just been kind of looking at some various, you know, research and so on and so on. So I'm saying carbon capture is not the answer. With decades of misinformation from big oil, we're right now at code red. At a recent congressional hearing, CEOs of 5 major oil companies admitted for the first time that climate change is real. They pledged that by 2050, they would be carbon free. Yet we find that actions speak louder than words. Millions are tossed to friendly candidates, $750 million donated, 80% to Republicans, who are mostly climate deniers. Facebook, meanwhile, is chock full of disinformation. Exxon has spent $4 million on false advertising. As an Exxon lobbyist recently admitted, did we fight against some of the science? Yes. Did we join shadow groups? Yes. His rationale? Looking out for their investments. This means that when it comes to a Paris Agreement, they fall short. Chevron, meanwhile, said zero carbon could be a top priority. However, since 2015, while Chevron has reported 986 total instances of federal lobbying, there was none for the Paris Agreement. Yes, there's something Chevron really cares about, corporate tax breaks, for which they've lobbied 144 times. When Trump withdrew from the Paris Agreement in 2017, the White House was never lobbied. Big oil never batted an eye, which means that when you care about an issue, you lobby. British Petroleum lobbied 488 times, but only once for the Paris Accord. Exxon, meanwhile, has spent $67 million on lobbying since 2015. While they lobbied 153 times, only once was the Paris Agreement mentioned. For our nation's defense, climate change is a real and present danger. Instead of addressing their role in global warming to help our country, Exxon took the opposite tack, misleading 9 scientists on climate change. Meanwhile, Indiana's Republican Quigley went on to say how British Petroleum has been fined millions of dollars for refinery leakage at the Northwest Iowa, India Whiting Refinery. He said in 2015 to 2018, they conducted 9 emissions tests and failed all 9. Hence, while British Petroleum has dispensed soot into the Chicagoland area, as well as having a history of pollution to the U.S. and around the world, a recent $500,000 fine was a slap on the wrist. And now carbon capture is used to enhance oil extraction. But when it comes to carbon capture's role in the future, many reports that they have systematically overpromised and underdeveloped and emissions reductions. The technology has not made a dent in CO2 emissions. Now, with billions of barrels of oil every day, we are witnessing the complete breakdown of weather patterns. We are enduring floods and fires and hurting the earth that sustains us. We are watching our planet die. While there are similar tactics, will there be similar tactics with carbon capture? Given the fossil fuels track record, things don't look too good. Hence, with every caution, with professional input from local businesses, from Nebraska Northeast Forester and the EPA, we have to find ways to look carefully at carbon capture. This is for the now, this is for the future. For our children and grandchildren, we have to put out the planet that's on fire. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
So your concerns about carbon capture. Is that the what we're having public hearings on coming up? No. The pipeline? Yeah. I think it's on the agenda.
We have any scheduled.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe Dayton, when he comes on it during the new business, we can get that to that, a little bit of that. Okay. Any other public comment? Ron, thank you for your comments about your concerns about the planet. I, too, am concerned about the planet, and exactly. Any other public comments on items not on the agenda? Okay, if not, we'll move forward to the consent agenda. The consent agenda has 2 items on it, approval of the previous meeting minutes from November 29th and approval of payroll claims for the period November 28th through December 11th. I did review the payroll claims, and everything appeared to be in order. Our road crew did put in some extra time on Saturday, which was to be expected in light of the snow. So it was nice to have them out clearing the roads for us on Saturday. But everything looked definitely to be in order for this payroll period.
So moved on the consent agenda.
Okay, Bob, motion.
Seconded.
Troy seconded. Any other questions on the minutes or the payroll claims? All right. Roll call on that.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to do a little shuffling on the agenda here just in light of some items. I want to move item number E out of miscellaneous and old business up to the first item on new business. So item E will move up to the new business. And item C under new business will go down to miscellaneous and old business. As item E as the last spot on that one. That way we'll be able to work with people that are here to visit with us today. Do I need to make a motion to do that, or can I just move those items? Is it acceptable? Okay, acceptable to just move those. Okay, so basically I moved item E up, recognition of Joan Spencer for receiving NACO's Lifetime Achievement Award, honoring a career devoted to county government. I was very pleased to be at the conference, but at the breakfast on Saturday, right before Pete Ricketts was brought to the, or was it right after Pete Ricketts?
Right before
Pete Ricketts came to the stage, announced Joan. I wish I would have had some of the expert excerpts that they read from the nominations, but I don't have those. But anyway, okay. Lifetime Achievement Award, 30 years, and she got a really cool plaque. So that's pretty impressive, I think. Well deserved, I would say. Yeah, very nice.
I want to second that, Janet, if I can. One thing that I've learned being around the courthouse for a few years now is how busy the clerk is.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody wants to sit in Joan's shoes someday, be ready for a lot of phone calls and a lot of questions. And, you know, the clerk, her office is, and her in particular, I don't know how she does it. And if there is any way that we can convince her to stick around any longer than this term, please talk to her and see if she can do that. But no, in all sincerity, she does a great job, and I don't know how she does it, but congratulations on your
thank
award.
Thank you.
It was well deserved. Yep.
Thank you.
Budget manager, HR manager,
does it all.
A little bit of everything. Every phone call.
Everything.
All right. Well, thanks for your service, Joan. I think it was well-deserved and good recognition. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll have to get. You might have to get a picture of this.
We'll
this
get
is,
a picture. Of
yeah, definitely. Yeah, front page material here, I would say.
It's a slow news week.
So far.
Yeah. So far.
Okay.
Where was this meeting in Lincoln?
It was actually in Kearney. It was the state. Okay. State National NACO, which is national Nebraska Organization Association of County Officials.
Okay.
Yeah, so in all 93 counties were represented there at that meeting, and yep, very good meeting. All right, so that now we will move on to the regular item A under new business. Dayton Murdy here to address the board regarding a presentation on the Summit Carbon Solutions, including economic and environmental impact, easement acquisition, and construction process and timeline. All right. Dayton, welcome.
You guys already got handouts ready. That's perfect. Right. Hi, my name is Dayton Murdy. I'm the Director of Government Relations at CG Strategies for our government affairs firm based out of Lincoln. We're contracted to do the public relations work for the Nebraska arm of Summit Carbon Solutions CO2 pipeline. Appreciate the time to get to speak to you all today. I'm going to be going over a little bit about the project, how it's going to enhance the ethanol industry, the project location and partner facilities. We've got a map provided for you all. I'm going to go over the economic benefits, the environmental impacts, our commitment to safety, and compensation for landowners, crop loss compensation, how we plan to deal with drainage tiles, and a timeline. Summit Carbon Solutions was formed in 2020 and is headquartered in Ames, Iowa. They're investing $4.5 billion to create the world's largest carbon capture and storage project, and they were founded and sponsored by the Summit Agricultural Group, which produces corn in Iowa. I've got a short video that I can provide to you electronically if you'd like to do that at a later time. So at our 31 partner ethanol plants, Summit Carbon Solutions will install new state-of-the-art infrastructure. Carbon dioxide is captured that otherwise would be emitted into the atmosphere. The captured greenhouse gases are compressed and moved through a newly constructed pipeline system, and the CO2 arrives at the injection site in North Dakota, where it will be permanently and safely stored in deep underground geologic formations. Summit enables ethanol to be produced more sustainably, allowing it to better compete in a low carbon world. For low carbon fuel, premiums will be paid. Ethanol will continue to provide a key market for corn, and as I'm sure you all know, 40% of the U.S. corn crop is supplied to ethanol plants each year. Ethanol and agriculture work together to add value across the supply chain as well as create economic impact and jobs for rural America. In the United States, each year, the ethanol industry adds $43 billion of annual GDP contribution, and each year the ethanol industry supports over 340,000 jobs. In Nebraska alone, the ethanol industry has an $11.1 billion total economic output and supports over 39,000 jobs. The long-term viability of the ethanol industry is critical for agriculture and rural America. As I mentioned earlier, we've got 31 biorefinery partners, and those are across 20 companies. Six of those facilities are located here in Nebraska. The Green Plains facility in Atkinson, the Green Plains facility in Central City, the Green Plains facility in Wood River, the Green Plains facility in York, Husker Ag, and Louis Dreyfus. The project spans five states, including Nebraska, 2,000 miles of newly installed pipeline, 12 million metric tons of CO2 transportation capacity, and 2.8 billion gallons of ethanol production capacity connected. I've shared with you the map, which includes where those partners are located, the anticipated 314.71 miles of pipe route here in Nebraska, and also pipeline diameter in each of those places. Summit Carbon Solutions economic benefits the project will drive economic growth and job creation across the Midwest and beyond. As I mentioned before, we are investing $4.5 billion with operations beginning in 2024. For the project and building the pipeline, we'll have between 132 to 198 jobs at the capture and compression facilities, with 14,000 to 17,000 construction jobs for the pipeline across the five states. Once the project's operational, we will support over 220 to 307 jobs at each of the capture and compression across the project area at the capture and compression facilities, the 128 to 156 jobs on the pipeline, for a total of 348 to 463 permanent jobs once the project is operational. And Summit Carbon Solutions is committed to utilizing local union and non-union contractors, local suppliers, and local businesses to provide ongoing economic benefits to local communities across Nebraska and the Midwest. Now, we're creating the world's largest carbon capture and storage project. What does that mean for our environment? It means 12 million metric tons of CO2 will be stored each year. That's the equivalent of removing the CO2 emissions from 2.6 million cars, or the amount of CO2 stored by 14.7 million acres of forest. But our number one commitment is to safety, deploying existing proven technologies to reduce carbon intensity of ethanol production. At Summit Carbon Solutions partner facilities, the carbon dioxide will be captured and compression equipment will be installed to capture those CO2 emissions. Small underground pipelines will connect each facility to a large trunk pipeline, which will transport CO2 to the sequestration site in North Dakota. The pipeline will be buried at a minimum of 4 feet deep to the top of the pipe. All pipeline segments will be constructed with high-strength carbon steel and have a wall thickness ranging from 0.25 inches to 0.688 inches. The pipeline system will be approximately 2,000 miles, and the nominal diameter will range from 4 to 24 inches. Captured CO2 is permanently stored in geologic storage areas in North Dakota. Wells are drilled several thousand feet below ground where CO2 can be safely stored based on the standards put in place by the North Dakota's Department of Mineral Resources. Capture technology has already been deployed at over 40 ethanol facilities throughout the United States. Pipeline transportation is the safest method. More than 5,000 miles of CO2 pipelines already exist in the United States. And Summit will utilize highly rated and safe materials, including carbon steel. We will utilize proven technologies and employ the best industry practices to ensure the project is safe for landowners and the communities where they live, work, and raise a family. And I can share with you a map of the current U.S. CO2 pipeline footprint, if you would all like. So what our commitment to you? I've got it broken down into three statements. Summit Carbon Solutions will work with landowners, community leaders, stakeholders, and more with respect, honesty, and transparency. If you feel that has not been demonstrated, please reach out to us. The Summit line is info@summitcarbon.com, or you can reach out to me directly. I want to be here to answer any questions or address any concerns. that you all have or any of your constituents have. The safety of our operations, our employees, the communities where we operate, and our landowner partners is our top priority and always will be. And finally, we will be good stewards of the land across our entire project area. Summit Carbon Solutions will protect and restore lands, topsoils, drain tile, drainage systems, and more to their pre-construction levels. We're founded by an agricultural company. We're made up of farmers, and we respect the land, and we will make sure that it's repaired to pre-construction levels. So that brings me to compensation for landowners. Summit will have land agents assigned to each individual landowner for the duration of the project. We are committed to building and maintaining a positive, productive relationship with landowners built on trust and transparency. Along with safety, it is a top priority for Summit Carbon Solutions to negotiate easements with landowners that are agreeable for both parties and provide value to both parties. Easement rights are acquired with the land and are not impacted by future changes in ownership. Compensation is based on a fair market value for the land in the county. Summit will be utilizing recent comparable sales data for each county to determine the fair market value and will offer 100% of the fee value based on that comparable sales analysis for its permanent easement. Summit will pay for anticipated damages to crops or lands prior to construction and work directly with landowners to address their specific concerns related to the impact of construction on their property. For crop loss compensation, the company will pay the following percentages of the crop loss to production: 100% coverage of crop loss in the first year, 80% coverage of crop loss in the second year, and 60% coverage of crop loss in the third year. And you can replant after we're done with construction, but the reason that we pay additional crop loss compensation for the years following is for potential loss of yield from compressing the soil through that construction process. And compensation figures will be based on the prevailing market price index by crop type or in accordance with any prearranged purchase agreements and based upon the three-year annual average yield of the crop as documented by the landowner or by the records from the local agricultural agency. The pipeline on the project will be buried at a minimum of 4 feet deep to the top of the pipe in order to help better address drainage tile. Summit will work with each landowner to develop a plan to restore drainage systems to its prior function, which could include individual drain tile repairs, installation of new drain tiles, or redesign and reinstallation of the drainage tile system. As a common practice, Summit will employ a professional drain tile company to repair tile damage during construction, but we are also willing to work with landowners who prefer to hire their own contractor for repairs. And Summit will pay reasonable costs if the company chooses to have a representative present during this process. And when practical, Summit will work with landowners to relocate tiles prior to the start of construction. So finally, after I've talked to you for a very long time, I apologize. That brings me to my projected project timeline. September of 2021 through February of 2022, we're hoping to survey the potential pipeline route, including environmental and cultural surveys. October of 2021 through March of 2023, we are going to be working with landowners to acquire land rights. And starting in 2022, we're going to be petitioning for permits at the federal, state, and local level in the five-state project area. Following permit approval, construction can begin. We will prepare and clear the route, segregate soils and trench, lower the pipe, and restore the land. And that third infographic that I've shared with you explains that process in detail. In Q2 of 2024, we'll have commissioning and startup with the project being operational in 2024 if everything goes as planned. So thank you so much for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. And again, thank you.
The first one that comes to mind to me is, so what do you do with a landowner that doesn't want it on their land?
Well, we're certainly trying to work with each individual landowner to come to agreements, and hopefully with the land agents being assigned to each individual landowner, we can address their concerns and move forward.
Yeah, because will you guys, are you familiar with eminent domain?
Okay, that's a very good question. We are actively trying to avoid using eminent domain. We certainly do not want to force somebody to have the pipeline on their land if they don't want it. And so we're attempting to go out of our way to avoid those landowners or work with those landowners to address their concerns. Well, with that being said, it's not something that's taken off the, it's not something that's taken off the table. We're just, we don't want to use it. We're working hard so that we don't have to use it. And in the future, we don't know if it will be a necessity.
Okay. Are you having a public, the public hearing? I think there was a schedule of public hearings. Was that for landowners? Like in, there was one local in January?
So 25th? We're at various stages of the process uh-huh. across the five-state project area.
Okay.
We're trying to make, I've been trying to reach out to you all individually to talk about the project uh-huh. and provide information as we were getting it. Now we're in Nebraska in the process of coming to these public county commission meetings to give you all a formal update on where we're at. As we move forward, we'll be utilizing various other ways to outreach to the public and make sure that we're available and transparent, and we want to address concerns and questions as they come up. I can provide you all my card after this presentation so that if you have anybody who reaches out to you directly, you can pass them on to me and we can work with those individuals. But I don't know of anything scheduled here in Nebraska in January, but there will be things scheduled throughout 2020.
Have you said the county, there's a permitting process to the county?
It varies throughout the five states. So there's federal rules that we have to abide by, state rules, and local level in certain counties. We've got a legal team that will be handling the permit application process. My job is to let you all know what we're doing and be transparent. Luckily, I'm not an attorney. I don't know I'm not involved with the permitting process right now.
Dakota County has an ethanol plant. Are you not? But I don't see you in Dakota County on your map.
We've reached out to all the individual ethanol plants in the Midwest Project area, and those discussions are held with the Summit team in Iowa, and it's really a decision that's made at the individual plant level. We're certainly not opposed to adding additional ethanol plants here in the state of Nebraska, but those are conversations that the ethanol plants are having with Summit Carbon Solutions to see if this is right for them.
Do you have a map of Dakota County exactly? I mean, have you contacted landowners or?
They're not in Dakota.
They're not in Dakota.
Right? You're not in Dakota County, correct?
So, yes, it should.
It will be.
It should touch the corner of Dakota County. Let me see if I've got. I've gotten some of the county level maps back. I do have a county level map of Dakota County that I can share with you if you'd like.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Because this one just cut off.
Yeah.
Well, I have.
Is it on a website I can go to, maybe?
I know it's been posted on the media. I don't know if we've got the Nebraska map posted on the website. I do have these maps here that I've asked for you, and then I'll provide the electronic copy of the Dakota-specific map after the presentation.
So you are connecting to the ethanol plant?
The pipeline will pass through Dakota County, but we are not going to connect to the, as of this point, we're not going to connect to the ethanol plant.
I guess I'm confused. Are you connected to the Heartland Greenway CO2?
No, that's a different project.
Okay. Maybe that's where I'm getting confused.
Yeah, that one's the Navigator. That's a separate company.
Okay.
We're doing kind of the same thing. They're taking their CO2 to Illinois.
Okay.
And ours is going to North Dakota, and ours is going to be the largest one in the world. So.
Once it's injected into the ground, what happens then? I mean, does it just stay there forever and ever, or does it come back up to the surface?
So It will stay there. And
what keeps it there?
So there, it's a specific geologic formation that we will be injecting it into, a porous rock or a saline formation. There's actually about 20 facilities in the world that do this currently. And there's several layers of cap rock that must be there before we can drill and inject CO2. But it's the geologic formation that will keep it there. And then over time, the CO2 will actually solidify and turn into rock. And the state geologist did a presentation on this in front of the state legislature this year. If you'd like, I can pull that transcript and share the state geologist's analysis of carbon sequestration. It's a lot more in detail than I can give you personally, but it's a really good presentation that I can share if you'd like.
Does this have to be approved by the state for the initially to get started on this, and then you go county level?
So the not in Nebraska. There's an approval process in Iowa that we're currently undergoing, which is why the county board presentations in Iowa have been happening for a while, and I'm just now getting to you now. Specific states, they have different regulations for the CO2 pipelines, but the legal team will be making sure that we are up to date on all the permitting process throughout the five state areas, each one of the counties, and the federal government regulations.
But Nebraska is not a, you know, you haven't had to go to anything state level to get.
No.
Okay.
The Summit Carbon Solutions is your company.
Yes.
Are you a competitor of Heartland Greenway CO2? And they're both going to go through Dakota County?
I don't know if they're going to go through Dakota County. I just know that they're out there.
Okay. But it's a similar.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I've heard about that one.
It's a CO2 pipeline, mm-hmm. and we're a CO2 pipeline.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess you could call us competitors.
Yeah. So I mean, so it's a learning curve for us to get our thoughts together and learn about this. So, because the landowners will be probably contacted by you. You mentioned.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have to contact the landowners in order to survey the property and mm-hmm. make sure that the anticipated pipeline route is viable, mm-hmm. and then we'll be working with the landowners to purchase those easements in that anticipated pipeline route, mm-hmm. Which we have a land team working on already. So we've got a lot of steps left in the process, and we're just trying to provide as much information as possible to the public as we can, because although it's a couple of years, it's still a pretty short timeline for a project of this size, so we want to make sure we're available to answer questions and delineate between the two projects when necessary, mm-hmm. and address those concerns.
Okay. So we don't need any action today. This is just giving us the information so we can start researching
exactly
the routes, the impacts.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Any other questions from the group regarding this?
How many years does it take for it to solidify?
50 to 100.
Hmm. So it's going to stay liquid then till.
So the CO2 is compressed and dehydrated down to a supercritical state. So it acts like a liquid, but it's because it's so compressed. And when it's injected in the ground, yes, it'll fill up those pore spaces in its liquid form. If it's for any reason released from the pipe, then it will turn back into a gaseous state and dissipate into the atmosphere.
Quite like propane. Propane is a liquid until you release it in the atmosphere, and then it turns to vapor.
As far as the state of the gas goes, yes. CO2's a non-toxic gas that we breathe in every day. It's non-flammable. So it's a little bit different from propane in that sense. But as far as the state of it goes, then yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, Dayton, so this is kind of our introductory to this process, and in your timeline would be, wrote it down. So our landowners will be getting contacted They are currently being contacted?
They are currently being contacted.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you're working with them on pricing and all of that?
Yeah, yeah.
Fair and consistent with our... Okay.
I've got cards for everybody.
Okay, that'd be great.
Personal
Thanks.
Contact information.
Thanks.
You've got any questions?
And I think you have a website, too, don't you, we can go look at?
Some of those, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Dayton. Appreciate you coming up, visiting with us. Okay. Item number B on the new business agenda. Approve the chair to sign resolutions 21C-047, which is the year-end certification of the county highway superintendent for determining our incentive payment. Jolene, is this something you're going to talk to us about?
Basically, the state sends us out every year just to make sure we've had a highway superintendent. So the first 6 months, or first 5 months, will be filled out with Fred's information, and the remaining of the year will be mine. And when we turn this in, then it just proves to the state, yes, you guys did have one hired, and they will cut their incentive check about February or March to the county.
And then we get a payment for having a certified superintendent. Okay.
How much money is it?
For Class B, it's $47.50. For Class A,
$97.50,
I believe.
$47 is what we're looking at?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then so, you and Brent fight over that money?
Well, I'd win, I think.
So $5,000 to $10,000 we are awarded for.
It's based on having the rural population.
Oh, okay.
There's several other factors, but the rural population of the county is the main one.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve the chair to sign the resolution.
I can second.
Okay, we got a motion from Bob and a second from Troy to go ahead and certify our county superintendent or county highway superintendent for to turn in our year-end certification.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
All right, so I'll sign off on that and get our, so we can get our money for this coming year, or is it in arrears?
It requires all the board members.
Okay, all right.
Just that top one.
And let's see, and so the item C, we're going to move down to the end of old business. That relates to something we do every election cycle. So we're down to miscellaneous and old business right now. Item number A is Jolene. You're going to give us the biweekly road report, and I think that is in our packet.
Okay, the guys had 178 hours of road maintenance, 83 hours of overtime, 6 hours tree removal, 24 hours for garbage pickup, 82 hours on snow removal. We didn't haul any gravel in the last 2 weeks. 27 hours working on signs, and we had a concern about grading on Blyberg.
Okay.
Any other questions?
You were at the NACO thing, but there was a lot of good information on new designs for bridges and culverts and things like that.
Right.
So
yep.
We'll have to share that stuff with the team.
Yeah, I was talking to Brent about some
good
of it today, and we'll look into it more tomorrow. Today's kind of busy.
Yeah, and you guys are busy doing snow removal. Thanks, Jolene. Thank you. All right. Item B on the miscellaneous old business is Sheriff Kleinberg's monthly jail report. The sheriff here. Okay. Anybody else want to give this report?
I don't have it. So
okay.
I couldn't give it to you.
All right. Let's see here. I can give a quick summary here. For November, I'll just do a summary. We had 96 in-house inmates. We've been averaging 102 for the calendar year and 107 for our fiscal year. November marshal's income was $46,000. Calendar fiscal is $508,000. And a commissary commission was right at $14,000. Average cost per inmate for the month of November was $67.26, which just appears to be a little higher than last month, but probably around average, maybe a little higher than average for the cost. Budget-wise, we are at 39% of total estimated yearly budget spent through November. And they are about 18% under budget, about $45,000 under budget. Total bookings were 78 for the month of November. Dakota County Sheriff did 24 of those. South Sioux City Police did 31. State Patrol, 8. Certification, 6. Federal was 8. Other was 1. Let's see, Dakota County represented 20 of the residencies, 30 from Sioux City, 15 from other Nebraska, Iowa was 5, and other states was 8. So 78 bookings in November. And you guys have that in front of you as well. Any questions for the folks out here? Nope. Okay. All right, that was our jail report. Item number C on the agenda is a discussion and clarification of Phase 2 jail Federal Marshal Detention Services Intergovernmental Agreement and Shive Hattery Document B-132 Architect Agreement. So item C, do we have someone here to visit with us about that they're discussing and clarify?
Basically, it's the question that I'll ask of you that you wanted answered from the marshals or the architect. So, just to go over it so everybody understands it. One of Jan's questions was 120-day termination clause purpose. Does it apply to the first 30 months? Yeah, the responses that are read are from the U.S. Marshals. So the termination clause is embedded into every intergovernmental agreement issued to every county housing U.S. Marshal prisoners. This is a standard language designed to protect the sheriff's office and the government and should one party need to terminate. Below is the same language with the IGA with Dakota County from 2007. Terminations of IGAs are very rare. The primary reason for termination would probably be for detention standards not being met or inhumane conditions. And there's another piece in there that he added. I'm going to let the marshals, they want to speak.
Okay.
After I'm done here, I just wanted to get these questions answered. Another one, Jan's question was 85 spots not guaranteed after 30 months. The response and rest from U.S. Marshals. IGA provides $150 a day for a minimum of 85 beds once the construction is complete. For example, if Dakota County houses 110 U.S. Marshal prisoners, the same $150 a day rate would apply. Currently, the rate would last until the expenses are paid off or the expansion up to 30 months, whichever comes first. I did talk to Chris, the Iowa U.S. Marshal, about that. He said he's talked to him, it wouldn't be an issue to extend those months out to get the cost covered, because we know it went up to whatever, 13 and something million. And that's basically the difference between 30s. If you push it out to 36 months, it's $13.7 million to cover the cost. Another question from Janet was, can we remodel the rec area from more housing and add outside rec area? I talked to the architect about that, and they would have to do a study to see what it would cost, and that study would be at a fee. The only other concern with that question would be, if we just had an outside rec area only, what do we do when it's blizzard out, because they have to have X amount of minutes a day of outdoor activity, so it might run into some issue there. But another one of Jan's questions was, can construction management company be local? And actually, that's one of Larry's questions, too. White's is the company that the architecture firm had suggested because they've worked with them in the past, and they are from Omaha. They have experience building jails, and they could, but it could go to a local construction management company. There's nothing saying that White's would have to be that company. That would be up to you. You guys, the reason for White's and the construction management route was it's a quicker startup versus going with a general contractor. It would take longer. One of Troy had some questions that were answered by other ones, but one of the questions he had is, what's the exact number of employees needed and cost? And the cost is about $50,892 an employee with salary, retirement, and insurance. Probably 16 to 20 employees once we're at the 85 inmates. 16 employees is $814,272 a year. Bob, one of Bob's questions was, do we currently have a contract for the 20-ish federal inmates we house? Yes, that contract is technically the contract that we have signed now at the $80 a day. There is a 2007 contract as well, but I'll read what the marshals responded to that is. We currently have an IGA with Dakota County. This 2007 IGA allowed for 7,300 jail nights per year or 608 nights per month. It should be noted the previous agreement did not require Dakota County to house any prisoners for the U.S. Marshals. IGAs are agreements with the Sheriff's Office and the U.S. Marshals for use if available. The current proposed IGA has a specific language that would guarantee the U.S. Marshals Service bed space in return for U.S. Marshals financially supporting the addition of new space. The previous agreement only addressed housing U.S. Marshal prisoners when space was available without any guarantees. Larry, one of Larry's general questions was about local contractor, local construction. Once again, kind of answered it with Janet's question, but it's the cost of the construction management company is basically 4% of the total cost of construction, and that was $365,000 if it was at the current rate, $13 million if completed. But they could be local. That would be up to you. And whether you were the general contractor or a construction management firm, all those bids would be, they would do those bids for you, and then it would be up to you guys to decide if you wanted the low bid or if you wanted a local person if it was a little more. That all those decisions would be the board's decisions. Where are the plans that the architect drew up? Joan has a schematic, I do too. It's 20% complete. And that's what's been paid for. Nothing's talking to the architect, and he can answer any questions you may have on it. They do them in stages, so this is where they needed to get to a construction management or general contractor. If we move forward, they will continue to move forward with the plan. The plans, there's lots of designs that they have to bid packets and stuff they have to make up for those bids. Another one of Larry's questions was, heard Woodbury County now has the contract that we had or have response from the U.S. Marshals is Woodbury County Sheriff's Office has contacted the U.S. Marshals Service directly to express interest in receiving a similar IGA opportunity. In addition to Woodbury County, other sheriff's offices have expressed interest in receiving this IGA opportunity. Unfortunately, we do not have enough capacity currently to support more than one IGA of this kind in our area. So currently, we are the only one that has the IGA. Nobody else does. So, where is the funding for this contract coming from? Do we need to worry about government shutdown? And is funding guaranteed? And the response from the U.S. Marshals is, prisoner housing funds are specifically appointed to the U.S. Marshals to care for and house federal prisoners. This is a mandate by federal law 18 U.S.C. 413. Support the United States prisoners and non-federal institutions. To my knowledge, the U.S. Marshals Service has always been able to paper all required prisoners housing expenses on federal cases. During a shutdown, the prisoners would be housed at the jail, but the government is prohibited from paying any invoices until the shutdown is over. This rarely occurs, but once the shutdown is over, the jail will receive full payment for all expenses incurred for housing U.S. Marshal prisoners. The government has only shut down for a total of 52 days since 1997. 34 of those days were in 2019 alone. Shutdowns should not be confused with continuing resolutions. We are currently in a CR. During CRs, we are allowed to pay for critical mission essential expenses. Prisoner housing, care, and transportation are considered critical and essential. Funding is guaranteed for the duration stated in the IGA, but the only caveat would be during the rare chance of a shutdown, the payment may be briefly delayed. Scott had one question, and it is, if project does not move forward, does Dakota County have to pay back the increase in cost per inmate U.S. Marshal Service increased earlier this year? The answer is no. If we don't move forward, talking to Chris from the U.S. Marshals Northern District of Iowa, they're going to look elsewhere, and we should expect to lose 80% of our Iowa U.S. Marshal prisoners. The revenue from U.S. Marshal prisoners from in 2018-19 was $562,000, 19-20 was $809,000, to date 2021 is $688,000, and that doesn't include commissary. So we could be losing money if we decide not to move forward, because they want to condense that. We're in a unique spot, and that's why I believe the U.S. Marshal from Nebraska is here to talk about that. We currently house one U.S. Marshal from Nebraska, and it's not because they want more space. We just don't have it. So he can talk about that. The only other, not if we don't move forward, penalty would be from the architect. They in the contract you sign, there is a penalty if you don't move forward, and I think the cost of that is roughly $120,000. You can ask the architect, talking to Chris before the meeting, his hope is if you're not prepared to proceed, that we at least keep it on the table to see if we can reach an agreement. I mean, they really researched this. They put a lot of time and effort. The government just doesn't go around without making sure there's a need for them to enter a contract. But I'll let him talk about that a little bit. But nobody else has the IGA we have currently. But he said he's had other sheriff's offices ask if they can have it. If we're not going to do it, there's plenty of people out there that want it. I think it's a good deal. And I would hope if we don't move forward with it today, and I understand it's not on the boat, but that we would all get together and try to work it out somehow, because somebody else is going to get it, and we could be losing $400,000-$600,000 in income a year. That's $400,000-$500,000 that we got to come up with from the taxpayers. So, is there any questions?
And those figures that you read off,
yep.
That's income.
That's income from just the U.S. from the Northern District of Iowa, U.S. Marshals.
And seeing like this jail report, you know, it says we took in about 508 2021 calendar. See from feds, 508,000.
For the year?
Yeah.
Yep.
For calendar year, or 2021 calendar federal is 508.
Yep. And I had to do it today, just so it was up to date. Today's currently, that might be just 20. They do a different calendar year. Yeah. So they say 2020 to 2021. The 20 to 2021 so far to date is 689,000 that we've got from the U.S. Marshals, from just the Northern District of Iowa.
The past 12 months.
Yeah.
But does that include the $67 a day cost to house them? Now, like last month, November was 67.
Is that just for the U.S. Marshals?
$67 a day to housing. No, that's for all.
That's all of our prisoners.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't. I mean, I think what they do is take all of our prisoners and then divide the total number by what it costs to feed them, whatever medical it is. Yeah.
But my question would be: so if we get like 80.
$85
a day, and you take 67 off, that don't leave a lot of money.
But that's for that number would be crazy priced if you took the U.S. Marshals per diem out of there. You know what I'm saying? So that's the cost of county prisoners as well as federal prisoners.
Yeah, I understand.
Right, so.
If it costs that much for all, wouldn't it average out that it costs 67 for them?
It'd be cheaper to house a federal prisoner because if they have to do any out-of-facility medical care, that's covered by them. That includes out-of-facility medical care for our county inmates, meaning if they had to go to the hospital because they broke their leg or whatever they had to go to the hospital for, we pay for that, or the county pays for that. The marshals, if they leave the facility for medical care, the marshals pay for that. So, I mean, if it's an aspirin in the jail, we pay for it for a U.S. Marshal prisoner. If it's a broken leg in the jail for a U.S. Marshal prisoner, U.S. Marshals pay for it if they go to the hospital.
What about like shots for like diabetes or arthritis or something to that effect?
They're in the contract. I'm gonna get a copy of it, but I do. The contract that we currently have with the Marshals, it depends on what the medical condition is. If it's, I don't know about specifically about diabetes, but they do talk about dialysis. If it's something that they can do dialysis in the jail, if they had a federal inmate, they would pay for that. There's exceptions to that rule as far as what they will and won't pay for. For the most part, if it's an inmate that needs meds in the jail, we provide that. If it's a federal inmate, if they need outside care, that's covered by the U.S. Marshals. With some exceptions.
There are some awful expensive pills.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
Did you say that they want to visit too? Or?
Yeah, I think they want to.
Is that right?
As well. Any other questions?
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Hello.
Gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi.
So I'm Chris. Nice to see you all again.
Hi, Chris.
Just to answer your question about the medical. We pay most of the medical expenses outside of basically aspirin or they got a headache or minor things like that. Anything from dental care, they have a toothache that has to be extracted, the Marshal Service covers that. So we basically pay that. The jail will tell us how much it costs. We basically pay for them to go to the institution. We pay for the guards to travel over there. We pay to return them back. If they get hospitalized, we pay for all that. So most of the medical expenses outside of basically over-the-counter things that are given by the nurse, we cover all that. So we get a substantial amount of bills every month from jails across the state for medical expenses. So I would not say the county jail would have to handle most of those issues.
See, on one of the last items in the agreement, the contract between us, that when the prisoner leaves this facility, he's done here. He's going home or going out of country or whatever. We got to send him off with a week's worth of medications.
Yes.
And we got to make sure the copay is paid.
And we pay that. We pay all of those expenses.
It says it comes out of the per diem.
I'll take a look at that to verify. But we typically, when they send the inmates out, we typically cover the medications that are not given from the facility themselves. But that's a big part of contention. I can discuss it with our shop. If that's in there, we can make some tweaks to
that's
that.
What puzzles me. See, if we've got to pay, given a week's worth of pills, we got to pay for that and the copay. Well, what's different about that than the guy being in jail?
Yeah, no, that's strange. We did, I think last year alone, I looked at our, we have a contract that handles most of our prescription medication stuff that basically the jail bills the company, and then we basically verify that that information is correct. We do a lot of those. I think last year alone, we did like 8,000 of them. So that's a lot of prescriptions that we filled from prisoners. So that's not an unusual thing for us to cover. So that seems like a strange cost for you to incur. So I'll take a look at that and get you information about that.
I wish I had that darn thing with.
And just I wanted to kind of follow up with the information about the Marshal Service shifting if this deal does not go forward. So that's not a punishment thing. It's this simple logistics. If we have to move the 85 beds somewhere else, that's going to pull beds, just like if we were going to have the agreement here, we would pull from other county jails to fulfill, to consolidate all our resources in one place. So we have prisoners that are spread out all over the place. We're trying to consolidate them. So wherever this IGA goes, that's where the majority of the prisoners are going to go. So we're going to have to naturally pull people out of facilities to put them all in the same places, so we're not doing a lot of trips back and forth.
One of the things that I keep going back to, and I'll go to it again, is on the first page, on the 30-month contract and how that works. I think I got it. But so I get it that you guys provide $150 a day for a minimum of 85 beds once the construction is complete, okay? So after it's complete, there's no guarantee that those beds would be filled. But the second sentence here is that if Dakota County houses 110 prisoners, the same $150 rate would apply. Currently, this rate would last until the expenses are paid off for the expansion or 30 months. So, I mean, I just want to be, in my mind, assured that the contract in place now pays for the jail.
Correct.
The 30-month window and what you guys have brought to us pays for, those figures are, it's 11, or we're 11 or 12 million, something in there. That is a given.
Right. So the government estimated how much we thought based on discussions in our research. So they estimated it would cost about $11, $12 million to build a facility on what you have. So that's where that number came from. So that after day one of construction is complete, we shift 85 prisoners here, or we don't shift any prisoners here. Mm-hmm. Day one, you will be able to bill the government for 85 beds of space, whether we have one prisoner here or we have 85 prisoners here. You're going to be able to get at least 85 beds worth of...
After it's complete?
After it's complete. After the jail is built.
30 months. For 30
jail,
months.
For the 30 months. Mm-hmm. So the jail, so the first day one that the jail opens and we house prisoners here, we're guaranteeing the county that every month you're going to at least bill us for 85 beds that we have at the jail.
See, I thought that contract said that you could... house up to whatever number that is after the 30 months. So
there's two parts to that.
Okay, mm-hmm. So this you're saying that, so I feel even better what you're telling me now, that we're guaranteed 85.
That's correct.
After the 30 months.
No, after the 30 months.
The first 30 months. So the first 30-ish months. I know we're in the discussion about how much it's going to actually cost. Let's just say it covers the full cost of the facility, right? So that's the first 30-ish, maybe 36 months, whatever the final numbers come back to. So on day one, the Marshal Service can get a bill from Dakota County for 85 beds. If that's all, if we have no prisoners there, we still get a bill for 85 beds. If I house 100 people here, we're going to get a bill for 100 people here at the same rate of $150 a prisoner. So once that basically exhausts, whenever the loan and the expenses are all paid off, we move to the second phase of this, which is the guaranteed bed space of 85 beds for the, I think, 10 years. But there's not a guarantee that we're going to pay for those 85 beds up front. But we have the space.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I got that part.
Okay, gotcha. So I want to talk a little bit more about the kind of research that went into this. So the government does not do deals like this a lot. These are very unique situations where a substantial amount of research goes into how the government, like where we house prisoners, how many people can house prisoners there, what's the bare minimum number of people we feel like we can keep in the facility. I have no concerns that we can keep 85 people here. I brought the marshal from Nebraska here as well. He oversees all of the prisoner housing for the state of Nebraska. So he's aware of the same issues. We all have the same challenges of trying to find bed space. So he has prisoners in Iowa. He has prisoners here. He has prisoners in different places where we're all trying to find better housing solutions for us long term. So that, for us, the government went through and looked at all the places that feed this area. Dakota County is kind of situated in a pretty good spot where you have a lot of places that are within relatively close driving distance that can house prisoners for us. So South Dakota, you know, we have Sioux Falls, we have airlifts that go out of Sioux Falls a lot of times. We have folks that come out of Omaha, we have folks that come out of Council Bluffs, we have folks that come out of Sioux City. They could even come out as far as Cedar Rapids, or they could be from anywhere. So basically, the bed space that we know that we can pretty much guarantee will be is 85 beds, and we think we'll have more. Today, I looked at our prisoner count. We're at like 130 prisoners here in the Sioux City office, but they're all spread out all over the place. I think we only had about 22 in Dakota County. So the rest of those prisoners are spread out all over.
So why aren't, I mean, this is a silly question maybe, but why wouldn't you build your own facility if you're trying to consolidate your prisoners in one location rather than spreading them out all over?
The government doesn't really build facilities just for like pretrial. They're typically Bureau of Prisons that builds those facilities, and they just don't have any here. That's just not something that's in the cards for the government to build a facility. It's expensive to build a full-time facility with staff and federal prisoners, and there are a lot of things that go into play with that, a lot of things with the counties, a lot of things with the state that have influence over that. So currently we're not building any more buildings.
And these are all pretrial?
These are all, they're mostly pretrial. When you say pretrial, they're not being sentenced here. They're typically being here pretrial. They might have a plea. They might get sentenced and still be housed here, but they're basically waiting to get shipped
off.
It's
not a federal.
No, this is not a federal.
So I think the difference is a federal penitentiary is a different.
Yes, this is not a sentenced place. So the only time that it would come in play would be inmates that are sentenced for shorter durations. They might get time served or have, you know, 20 days left to serve on their time. They'll probably spend that remaining time here, as opposed, it would take longer to basically load them up, get them on an aircraft, get them shipped to their facility. So the government does computations to make sure there's enough time for them to basically make it from here to their final destination. There's not enough time, they would just stay put.
What's the maximum we could keep them?
Just depends. I mean, there are a lot of variations in that. So it depends on how long their case takes. Their trial might take 2 months, it might take 3 months, it might take 2 days. There's no limit for us. Those people will stay here. Basically, we get audited on our side from the government side, Marshal Service. The government doesn't want to spend money to keep sentenced prisoners here, because once they're sentenced, they technically need to go to the Bureau of Prisons. So we, as the Marshal Service, has to pay for bed space when they're basically housed in county jails, versus when they go to Bureau of Prisons, the prison system handles that. So it's not in our best interest to keep people in local facilities, but out of logistic purposes, we sometimes have to, because it will take more time to ship them off than them just staying put.
I think I when I did some research, it appears there are some federal detention centers or like wings of certain facilities that become federal detention centers. You know,
so
that's kind of where I'm confused. Why?
So we have some places that are not they're technically Bureau of Prison facilities. Typically, they're like halfway houses. Mm-hmm. They're not prisons. They're not jails. They're like half like camps and things like mm-hmm. that. We don't typically house prisoners there pretrial. And the other problem is prisons are not supposed to house pretrial inmates typically. That's in a rare circumstance. Those are actually for sentenced prisoners. Mm-hmm. So Bureau of Prisons has actually federal detention centers, which are not prisoners, not prisons, mm-hmm. but they're designed to house pretrial inmates. We don't have, they call them FDCs, federal detention centers. Mm-hmm. We don't have any of those here. But all the post-sentence stuff, people that get sentenced or whatever, there's a number of different halfway houses and camps that allow for federal inmates to be housed, but that will be our inmates. We have nothing to do with that. That's the Bureau of Prisons, where people are basically getting released early or things like that.
Mm-hmm. Would the scenario ever play out where, say we do this, Woodbury goes ahead with their facility that they're talking about building over there, would we ever get into a situation where, oh, they're cheaper, we go there versus here?
No.
Or are the dollars all the same, whether they would be in Woodbury in Iowa or here?
No, they're not the same. The dollars aren't the same, but that wouldn't be an issue. So the part of this agreement is the government has invested this money and plans to use that bed space. So that's why we're saying we need those 10 years. We've done agreements like this with other jails, mm-hmm. Woodbury County being one of them. For the time that they had the inmates, they basically were full of all of our inmates that they had there. And the next day after, they did not need the agreement was up, we had to pull our inmates out. So we've done an agreement with Woodbury many years ago about this. A little bit different, it was a cap kind of agreement where we gave them money to basically build on additional space for us. But no, our prisoners, we filled up those beds every single day, but we had the beds that were there.
So how would it ever be determined if Woodbury's got 300 beds and we have 100? How do you determine who goes where?
Where our contracts and our agreements are. So we have an agreement here. We have an IGA with Woodbury, but it's not like this. So we're not investing money in Woodbury County. We don't have to house any inmates at Woodbury County. Right. I can house all my inmates here and be just fine. It wouldn't matter about the rates and all that. We have an agreement with the facility that takes the precedence and the priority for where we house prisoners.
And what could change that?
Nothing.
Outside of no administration changes, whatever changed that.
That's what's kept the Marshal Service alive for many, many years is the agreements with the county jails across the country. This is not unique to just Iowa or Nebraska. This is across the country. We don't have enough Bureau of Prisons or detention centers to house the inmates.
And how long would our contract be? How long could we go? I mean, could we go 20 years, whatever?
20 years, 30 years. You're open to renegotiate after, I think, 3 years. I think it's 36 months. Yeah. But this agreement would basically be concrete until the 10 years is up. Okay. And then after the 10 years, you can renegotiate for a new rate. You can renegotiate for different cost expenditures or what's coming up. And that's basically designed to deal with inflation.
After the 30 months, you want the guarantee of the 80, 85 beds. So what if you only need 50 or 30? Or then what happens?
So those beds, if we have, so the beds are yours to use as you see fit. But the guarantee for us is if we only have 50 and we're guaranteed 85, if we come in with 35 additional prisoners, you need to make space for those 35 additional prisoners. That's the only thing. But if you want to use those spaces for something else, that's totally fine too. If you have more prisoners that are housed here, basically what has happened in the past, typically when jails that do that, is they'll basically house prisoners and we'll have a guarantee. We may not hit the 85 or whatever the number is. They'll actually they'll have other prisoners that are being housed there to fill in the beds. And then when we come in, like, hey, we need those beds back, they'll ship those other prisoners out and then they'll put our prisoners there to get back to the 85 or whatever the number would be.
Isn't that a lot of work to ship all the prisoners back out if you have a bunch coming in?
Not when you're making $2.5 million a year off of it. It's a lot of money, so it's really a revenue-based thing. So for them, the jail, those other prisoners are probably not paying a higher per diem rate. They're probably paying $50, $60, $40, or whatever they're paying. We're paying, I think this one's at $80 a prisoner.
Yeah.
So we're paying a substantial amount more money for those inmates, and they don't have to deal with any of the expenses. Most of the stuff is covered by us. Transport, medicals, outside of things that are, if they get hospitalized, they end up in the hospital, dialysis, whatever, we cover all that. So,
you know, it seems like there's a lot of counties that are talking about this. I mean, I'm trying to get my head around how many prisoners in all these counties that you have agreements with. How do we envision the growth of, I guess I've envisioned the growth of the prison population to be going down, not going up, by looking at the Department of Justice incarceration rates. They've been going down. So in an area that's less populated, the upper Midwest, I mean, I just can't get my head around how all of these counties can have these contracts and you feel like you're going to be able to fill all these beds.
I haven't had any trajectories that I've seen from our internal prisoner production mm-hmm. that have said contrary to we're getting more prisoners. The U.S. Attorney's Office is prosecuting more cases. They're getting stricter on regulation from different things. This is, you know, the politics don't really influence how most of the federal prisoners come. Some of that stuff is immigration related, but that's not the majority of what we deal with. We deal with a lot of just guns, drugs, sex offenders, all those things. Those things will always be illegal, and people will continue to do them, so we'll continue to arrest them, and they'll continue to go to jail. So until that basically goes down, which has not happened in the last probably 10, 15 years that I've seen, our trajectory is going up. As a matter of fact, the federal courts are actually looking to expand to get a new judge is in the talks because of the amount of volume we got.
Mm-hmm. So, I was looking at a different report, but it was showing coming down until we hit COVID, and then it started to go up again. But the trajectory had been down for about the last, but maybe it's a different report that I was looking at. Department of Justice, what I was looking at.
Yeah, it could be different things in that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
For us, I know just in Iowa alone, our inmates have continued to grow. The U.S. Attorney's Office has continued to prosecute people. Their job is to keep the community safe, whatever way that takes. The crimes change, sometimes different things happen, but all those federal prisoners, when the reservation things pick up, I know the FBI is looking at some things with the reservations and different issues that come with that. So all those inmates that end up in federal custody, those are all the same prisoners that are going to be filling those beds.
That termination clause does kind of bother me, honestly. 120-day termination clause, and I know you mentioned that it, on page 12 of the contract, it talks about the anti-deficiency, subject to the Anti-Deficiency Act of 31 U.S. Code 1341, and something about unallocated funds, if there's a deficit issue. I guess, how does that play? Why is that clause in there if allocation and funds are not an issue?
So I've never seen that in act. I'm not sure exactly what. I'd have to talk to my general counsel about that stuff. Yeah. But generally speaking, the government's not going to let prisoners go when they're in custody. They need to be held in custody. The judges ordered them held in custody. The payment for those expenses has always come. The only, like I said in the document, we only deal with slow pay for like invoices is when they're in a shutdown, like an actual shutdown. Mm-hmm. Like we have people not even working in the office shutdown. Those cases are the only times where I've seen invoices not be paid. But as soon as the shutdown was over, you submitted all your invoices and we paid them all in full.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been with the Marshal's office?
12 years.
12 years, okay.
Have you ever seen a contract written without a 120-day?
I have not.
I didn't think so.
And the one I pulled from Dakota County from 2007 had the exact same language in it.
Mm-hmm. Now, on a CAPS program, a lot of time you're fronting the money for the facility, whereas this is the county would be responsible for borrowing the $14, $15 million and then subject to a bill that meets the criteria, and then at that point, then you would do the 150 for 80 beds.
Yeah,
but after that, there wouldn't be a guarantee after that. It'd just be hold the beds, but maybe not guaranteed number of beds.
Correct. After the after the loan is paid off. So we don't anticipate that to be an issue. Our goal is to try to consolidate. It's very labor intensive for us to house people in 12 different, 13, 14 different facilities because that's 14 different invoices, that's 14 different jails, that's 14 different medical issues, that's 14 different sheriffs to deal with. So there's a lot of different moving parts that come in that. So for us, consolidating that is substantially more feasible for us to do and reasonable. So I've never seen us kind of execute those like termination clause things as part of these deals when it's something. It's usually like an issue, like the jail is like melting or something, or something really catastrophic happening inside a facility where the Department of Justice usually gets involved, and then we can't house prisoners there. So,
what's the timeline? How we doing for timeline? I mean, I know you were here. I don't know when, a couple months ago or something like that. I mean, are we at the? Yesterday would have been good, but you know, where are we at?
We're close. You mean timeline as far as to make a decision?
Right.
We're close. We need to house prisoners. We're having more issues with jail space. With COVID picking back up, it's creating even more of a headache for us to try to ship people off and get people housed. So for us, it's close. I don't have an actual timeline on it, but not very long. And that's why I was trying to make sure I'm here to answer whatever questions you have to try to make you all feel comfortable with whatever the agreement is. But most of the phone calls I've gotten from the sheriff's department, they were ready to pull the trigger the next day to move forward. So,
well, in this particular case, I mean, the county doesn't necessarily need the space, so it would be basically a federal detention center. So the entire staff would be contingent upon, you know, federal inmates or detainees, I guess is what the right term is. And it's concerning to me that after the 30-month, there's no guarantee because, I mean, we have an entire staff that would be potentially, I mean, we don't break even on this at all until X number of prisoners, you know, if it's two-thirds full, for instance.
The government would not, the government's interest on that is why would they invest so much money on the front side to not fill the bed? So why would we give the $13 million it takes to build that and not put people in it? Because if that was the case, they would be better off just finding another avenue to deal with it. So that would not be cost effective for us. But even at 85 prisoners, I think I had some, I think it was at $80 a day, we had 85 prisoners. That's $2.5 million a year just in revenue from federal prisoners coming in. So that's a substantial amount of revenue that we have to have. We have not dropped below that amount of prisoners here at all lately. So there's no concern from our side that we can't fulfill it. It would only be from the county side, typically, mm-hmm. where they can't house it, which is why we have the agreement to try to bridge that gap.
So if you're not worried about it, you could guarantee more prisoners after that amount of time?
They won't do that. That's why they front the money. That's why they're paying you back for the jail. You're building the jail for free. So even if you didn't need to house those people, the government's basically position is if you don't need, let's say in 5 years, we don't house the 85 prisoners mm-hmm. and we have 10, it didn't cost you anything to build the facility. So those staff and the folks that you have, they would basically fill in the gaps wherever else they need to go. But in the case that we will, you would have enough staff to accommodate that. But that's part of why we're paying a higher per diem rate for people to accommodate that over time. So,
well, the annual cost of staffing a facility, another facility, and running a facility, utilities is going to be, upwards of $1.6 million, $1.75 million. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if there's only 10 people in there, we'd be going negative on it. That's concerning, because like I said, I mean, hopefully, like Dakota County hopefully won't have 200. I'm hoping we don't have 200 prisoners in Dakota County. We've been running, I think, 80 or so Dakota County for the last year.
I mean, but technically it's possible, but it hasn't happened. So
right.
that's not
right.
something that mm-hmm. that that I've ever seen. I've been in, this is my fourth district I've been in, and I've never seen that happen where the government, where we were basically saying the bed space, we need the bed space because we know how many people we're basically generating mm-hmm. on average. So so technically, yes, it could happen in theory. There's no guarantee for that, but the government's trying to offset that guarantee by basically reimbursing you for the cost of the facility with the understanding that we think we can house 85 prisoners here over time.
So they're guaranteed for 30 months, and after that, we're kind of, assuming that we're going to get.
But that would be no different than with the cap. So if mm-hmm. the cap agreement would do the same thing, I would have fronted the money, mm-hmm. gave you the money, you built the facility, you guaranteed me the beds, but if I didn't use them, mm-hmm. you still got to yep. keep the facility. It's yep. the same exact thing.
Right.
It's just
right.
where the money started. That's the only thing
yeah.
that changes.
Yeah. Who's borrowing at the onset?
Right.
Yeah.
So in Woodbury County, when they had it, we basically had it full because we had nowhere else to put people.
Mm-hmm. Any, did you have anything to add, sir?
Okay. Just here answering questions regarding Nebraska. In Nebraska, we currently have 465 inmates in our custody, and we spread them out 12 to 14 different facilities. Our biggest dilemma has been when they close the private prison in Leavenworth, Kansas, we average 150 inmates there, so we've been trying to find areas to place those inmates as well. And so we currently only have one inmate here. There's usually never any room to place Nebraska inmates here. We always allow Northern District of Iowa to place their inmates here because we have different options that we can use that are closer to Omaha and Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. The private, that's an interesting concept too. The private prisons, it looks like a lot of them are doing workarounds with their local county sheriffs and their local municipalities.
Yeah.
So that space that was supposedly going away is actually just...
Well, that may be happening somewhere else, but our main facility is in Leavenworth, Kansas, and that they're not working around that.
They're not, the Leavenworth County Sheriff's Department or the...
No, so our inmates, so we share a facility basically with Western Missouri and Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
In between the three districts, we usually have 1,000 inmates. So a lot of those inmates from Western Missouri and Kansas are going to the USP Leavenworth
mm-hmm.
Federal Penitentiary, so they're not using Core Civic. That's why we've had to find other places to go. We've housed inmates anywhere from Scottsbluff to Colorado to Arizona in the last couple of years to offset that.
So if we had 20 spaces open right now for Nebraska Marshals, would they be filled?
Yes, sir.
Probably. And to talk a little bit about the privates as well, this discussion for this agreement has been going on well before I even got here. and well before the executive order came out that banned the use of private prisons. Because private is typically for us in northern Iowa or for overflow, where we don't have anywhere else to put people. We end up shipping them to Arizona and Colorado where we have space. The privates usually have enough space to handle that. That's not the primary. They're very expensive. They're very costly. They're very heavy in labor and logistics to get them back and forth, especially pretrial inmates. So when they're here and the judge wants to have a hearing on an inmate tomorrow, I got to basically charter an aircraft to get them from Arizona to here by the next business day before court happens. So that's not obviously cost effective for the government to do that. So we try to avoid going to those places.
What is the nearest federal courthouse? We got one in Sioux City.
Yes.
Where is the next nearest?
It's probably going to be
Sioux Falls.
Sioux Falls.
Then Omaha.
And Council Falls will be right next to it.
What about Lincoln?
Yeah, we have
some. My main office is in Omaha. We have a sub office, courthouse in Lincoln as well. And occasionally they'll hold court in North Platte, but not typically. We usually have it in Lincoln.
I don't think I answered all of your questions, Janet. I think I missed a page. One of your questions was, where are the inmates from? Mm-hmm. And they're from the Northern District of Iowa. And I just talking to Chris, he said that, would you say about 300 inmates for the Northern District of Iowa?
Yeah, so currently we're probably 300, around 300 inmates. And a good portion of them were, like about 130 of them were in the Sioux City office. Mm-hmm. So, the other half, obviously, has come out of Cedar Rapids. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't just mean there'll only be prisoners from Sioux City. It could be inmates that are housed from Nebraska. It could be inmates from South Dakota. It could be inmates from, we don't have any ICE inmates mm-hmm. right now, but they could be ICE inmates as well. Mm-hmm. So those, there could be a number of different avenues, but the vast majority of them will probably be from the Sioux City office.
Okay.
And you asked what the average length of stay for a mm-hmm. federal inmate in Dakota County is 86.4 days for the average stay. So there's no long-term 6 months. It's an average of 86 days for each federal inmate for the last year.
Maybe you don't know, but the one thing is, so our maximum in this 30-month period is what, Joan, or dollars that we're going to, if we talk $12 million for the jail and it turns in to be $13 million, what's our maximum, what are we going to, how much are we going to get?
$11,000. It's on the very first page, I think.
If we would house 100 and...
Oh, 100, okay.
100 and what do we... What are we building now?
110 or 115
for 150. It came up to like 15 some million. 15. Okay.
So it would be enough.
If we would say full.
Like you said, they're willing to push that 30 months out to 36 months. Yeah, I mean, I think what's the number came in now? It's like 13.2 or something, 41. Mm-hmm. So talking to Chris, he said that was always open-ended, so we can go back, and if it takes 32 months to get to the 13 point, whatever the cost of the jail is, they're willing to push it out to that. One of the things that I always look at, and I'm talking to these guys too, is after 30 months, we could potentially, they could pull their inmates. The way I look at it, though, is after 30 months, or let's say 36, we have a brand new jail that nobody in Dakota County has to pay for. Yeah, if we have to lay off employees, that would I wouldn't want to do it, but it's something to look at. 3 years from now, we have a 3-year-old jail versus almost a 20-year-old jail. So that's another 27 years you don't have to worry about building the jail if, it's a brand new facility, and there's no reason why you couldn't mothball the old jail and go to the new jail. So it's one thing to consider. I mean, as far as, it's paid for after 36 months.
Well, like you said, I mean, why would they front it?
Yeah, they're not. I mean, there's no reason why they put $15 million. They don't want to pay $150 a day for an inmate, but that's why they got a 10-year contract, because they want to, like I said, he's got 120 prisoners in the Sioux City district. It makes sense for them all to be here. The other thing that I know that they like about Dakota County is we're willing to transport. I mean, we have a negotiated rate, hourly weight rate, and mileage, and we're willing to do that. And there's other counties that won't do that.
But the more we transport, the more employees we need and the more vehicles we need.
Sure, but
I mean,
so but you're right, absolutely. Most of our transports are across the river. We're going to Sioux City. So it's short-term transports. Would we need another van, maybe? Would we need, you know, we're going to have extra employees because we're going to have them. So we transport with the number of employees we have now. Do we need to add more? I don't know. Maybe one. We might. But I would agree, we probably need another van because we're going to be going back and forth because we're going to have more inmates go to hospital visits. But it's not that we're not getting paid for that. And I think the beauty of it is they don't have to worry about it. They don't have to make arrangements. And I know in the past, Woodbury County would not transport for them. So that's why they like us. And I know when I talked to the U.S. Marshal from Nebraska, he's like, yeah, transport, that'd be great. It's a big deal for them to try to take people to Scotts Bluff. You know, they have to arrange that. But to send their U.S. Marshals, they don't have enough staff to do that. So it's you're right, it does cost a little more money, but we are compensated for that money.
And if we're going to Scotts Bluff and we have somebody going to Lincoln and Omaha and Sioux Falls, yep. We might need a lot of people just to transport, if you're talking that many inmates.
Yeah, but remember, we're just contracting for the 85 inmates with the Northern District Bible, not Nebraska. Our contract with them, it includes transportation. Well, our transportation for them is usually just to Sioux City, to the hospital or to federal court, and to the flights at Sioux Falls. If Nebraska wants to do something, that's a separate issue as far as a contract for if they want us to transport.
Yeah, I wouldn't. They would have to transport to the Scotts Bluff for us. Usually if some that transport to court in Omaha,
yeah,
then we would facilitate. We have Dawson County comes to the courthouse a couple times a week, and so we just organize that way, depending on how many inmates we're transporting across the state of Nebraska.
And a lot of the jails, talk about the transport issue, a lot of the jails that we've used in the past, the agency in whole, they actually will bring in their people that are off duty. They'll come in and transport, do the trips on off-duty time because we're paying for those people to do the trips anyway. So they allows them to kind of generate overtime. They'll come in, do the trips, you know, return the prisoners. We're paying for the mileage. We're paying for the van costs, all that kind of stuff that goes with that. So they typically work that out. We haven't had any issues with the counties that, you know, we kind of just, they give us a fair rate. And I think we've negotiated a pretty fair rate for the county. If that doesn't work out, they just come back to the table for negotiation and let us know what we need to do.
That rate is $25 a day?
For
transport guard and stuff?
No, it's an hourly wait rate, and I think it's
30. Oh, yeah, that's what I meant, $25
an hour. $25 an hour.
$25 an hour, but it didn't seem to me that would cover the cost of the deputy being involved.
Well,
when they go to transporting.
That's right? Not always deputies. It's jail staff. The contract calls for certified jailer or certified deputy. So depending on most of the time, I mean, a lot of the time it is deputies, but not all the time. I'd say usually maybe a deputy and a jailer. But then there's mileage on top of that as well.
Yeah, true. So. But
that's per inmate. I mean, that's per jailer. That's not a flat rate. So it's $50.
$50. But I mean, his rate, hourly rates. With benefits, it's got to be over 25, don't it? For a deputy, anyway.
Well, for a deputy, probably, yeah.
So we'd lose money.
If there were a deputy doing it. Because a jailer, currently, we wouldn't. The contract calls for two certified jailers and two certified deputies, so.
Yeah, and then transported over to the doctor's office. One guy's got to stay there, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. How, you know how we bill on... I guess I'm not 100% on how we bill. So if we take somebody over to the federal courthouse, drop them off, come back, is that billed at 1 hour, or is that billed at the 15 minutes it truly took? I don't know.
No, so that cost encompasses the prep time, getting the inmates, all that. So it would be at least an hour to get them there. So it would at least be an hour there. They don't have to sit there. But if they are sitting there, that's part of the cost as well. So if they're sitting at our courthouse waiting for the inmate to come back, that's all billable hours. So it's not just road time. It is all the encompassing for the hours that they're assigned to that marshal service.
Well, they take a guy to the hospital, there's got to be a deputy on guard all the time, right?
Yeah, so typically hospitals are a little bit different. Hospitals, yeah. we actually will contract services out to handle hospital details.
Oh.
So you know, once they get into the hospital, typically they'll kind of cover the initial things and we'll spin up a different contract to go sit on those inmates at the hospital.
Oh.
So it won't tire jails up for that.
But even if it is $25 an hour, they're paying his wage. We're not.
I understand, but if it costs 30, then we're losing money.
Yeah,
if it ended up being overtime, it would be more than 25, I would guess.
Not if he's, on duty. You're on duty.
Yeah, they're on duty.
You're making money.
Yeah.
We're paying him because he's on duty.
Plus the prisoner calls.
He's on standby, but what do we? We still got the guy there doing nothing when they ain't transporting. So we're losing money that way.
No.
Oh.
Not if he's on duty and on shift.
If he's on duty and on shift, you can't take everybody out of there to transport
people. No, you can't take everybody out of there, but you're going to have to increase the staff.
Yeah. And so,
but right now we currently do it all with the staff we have, right? It's going to take more staff, but I mean, I think we probably look at how we do it. I'm not saying it won't take more, but it's, for the most part, it's compensated. And if it's not enough, I'm sure we can renegotiate. I already liked the dollar figure he was throwing out, so. Yeah, see, he'd be a 35. Poor Chris is like, ugh.
There goes that.
There goes the good deal that worked out. Everybody's raised for this year, so.
So I'm here. I didn't want to talk too much of your time. I want to make sure you had any other questions or concerns. I'm happy to address them. Most of the stuff I read through seemed like it was pretty straightforward stuff for me to answer, but if there's any, like, technical legal questions, I'd have to defer that to my general counsel up in D.C., but they've reviewed this. They have no concerns with it. If you have any concerns from their side, they're ready to move forward. So.
Thank you for coming. Appreciate it. We appreciate your input. All right.
Oh.
Do we have any public comment at this point? Any other questions for our guest? Any comment? Okay.
And since we're on the subject, when we were at Kearney, I talked to a supervisor from Hastings, and they're working on building a new jail and a courthouse. And since the COVID has happened, they have so much added expense and everything and having a hard time getting everything done, they're going to be lucky to get the jail built for what they allocated for everything. You know, that's another thing is the expense of this thing. I talked to a contractor or a gentleman that built stuff in Kearney, and he said with the roads bill that got done, iron, concrete, everything's going to go clear up in price because there's a whole bunch more money out there for people to grab and take. It's going to slow things down because they're doing more building. And the last thing I have is I don't want to build something, and if the money is not there later, I don't want to say, hey, you're fired. Thanks for coming on in. You're fired. I mean, you have a group of people. You have the camaraderie. You're all working together. That is a concern of mine. I wouldn't ever hire anybody at my business on the thinking, hey, I'm just going to close this down. I'm just going to fire you guys. That's it. That's a problem I have.
I agree.
So,
I got it. Hastings was building a new courthouse and a jail.
Yes.
And now
I forget what county it is.
Adams County. Yeah. Adams County.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're not able to go forward with both.
No, it's way too much money.
And they chose
the
courthouse.
I think they're gonna go with the jail the way he talked. The courthouses, they can't do both. They can't do all of it because everything is costing so much more money.
What led them to choose the jail over the courthouse?
Because I think their jail is old and it doesn't house enough people that they need. They are farming out a few people. So
Did they say what the farming out costs are?
I can't remember.
Because about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, they were 55, 65 a day. Because I know we spent a lot of money housing inmates of our own out because of the situation where we got overcrowded. So, I was curious. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Woodbury County Jail went from 40 million to 60. I don't know. I guess it's just material costs and forever. I didn't get into the detail.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of our concerns is cost structure. I mean, we're already up 30% where we thought we were, and that doesn't include the most recent report we got on those core samples and the dirt and the concrete price increases that are going to come, or dirt replacement and concrete. So it's probably going to be 30 to 40% higher, I'm guessing. I'm a little concerned about the timing as well with the supply and the labor market. I mean, it might be an okay deal. I'm just not sure that this is the right time. It seems almost irresponsible to do a building project in an environment where inflation is at 5-6% and unemployment is at 1%, and I only see costs going up for a facility that we don't, as a county, don't necessarily need this space. I mean, I understand the feds and the partner needing this space.
How else can you generate that much revenue?
Well, and then I go back to that very first page here. Right now we're generating, let's see, 20 current beds. We make $2.7 million in 30 months, and then 25 additional was $3.3 million. So the difference was only about $600,000, if I'm reading this right. I don't know. I think the cost of a whole other facility and a whole different staff. Right now, the extra money we're making is because they've done, you know, the jailers have done a great job, and the sheriff's department has done a great job of taking our extra space and converting it to revenue without any additional cost structure. But this, the cost structure in a whole different additional facility, is $1.6 million, $1.7 million per year, just the cost structure alone. Without.
They're going to find some other county that is going to do this project with them, and they can take all the federal prisoners with them, mm-hmm. and then we're going to be sitting there with no revenue off the feds too.
Yeah, that's possible.
That's what they said they would do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. coming from being
80% is what they said. We'll lose 80% of our federal inmates.
So 15 of our 20, or
yeah,
you're
going
to be in the hole even worse. Mm-hmm.
16 of our
400,000 to 600,000 mm-hmm. a year, I guess, how you look at it.
Well, now that we have a lot more facts, maybe we can put that information out there and have a public hearing and get some more input. But I really appreciate a lot more information, which is part of where I was mostly concerned. I mean, this termination clause, I still might want to visit with you about how that termination clause factors in with that, what was that clause, that Federal Deficiency Act, Anti-Deficiency Act 31, U.S. Code 1341, because that was specifically mentioned in the contract as a caveat.
Yeah, if you can send me your specific question on it, I can send it to
you. I would love to do that. Yeah, that would be great. Does somebody have a card? You have a card?
Yes, I'll get you a card.
Okay.
And also, I want to make one other statement about the cost. The IGA mm-hmm. did not have a cost like on it. It didn't say mm-hmm. 13 point whatever million or whatever, 15 million, because the government doesn't know how much it's going to cost to do the work. That's what was part of the agreement, was to get the new upgraded price so you all can kind of do your mm-hmm. research and come back with a cost for us. Like, so that we have not gotten the final number yet, so I think it'd be a little premature to just assume that that's the end of mm-hmm. the conversation. If
right.
you come back to the table and say, hey, we did inflation 3%, 4%, whatever it is, 40%, this is how much it's going to cost to do that, then that's where I think the negotiation will come back to us to see if that's something that we can handle. And I don't anticipate any issues with that. So
the federal government's willing to pay for a 30 to 40% overage of what the original estimate is, and understanding that it's inflation and supply chain?
It's very expensive to fly inmates from Arizona on a charter flight. Every week or every month or every quarter, that's a very expensive endeavor for us. So over time, that cost will offset, for the tax, not only just the taxpayer for your county, but taxpayers for the United States taxpayers that are paying for that. So we're trying to minimize the cost for us. So yes, the government would understand that there's inflation, there are things that come into play. That's stuff that we have to kind of navigate when it comes, but we haven't seen the final product yet, so we don't know what that number is.
And not willing to front the money either, wanting to do the borrowing, and then, okay.
Because the other way is if we front the money, that's it. like we give you the money, here's $12-13 million, and then you go do most of the jails. They take that as like a piece, and they still build the rest of it. They put the rest of the bill out
right.
of their pocket.
A portion.
But with the understanding that over time, they're going to make that money back up as long as we're housing prisoners there. And to my knowledge, we've always done that.
Okay.
So whenever they have challenges across the country, they need bed space, they always are looking for those facilities first. That's where those inmates are going to go get housed until the until we find additional space.
Because I think, in the way, with the schematics I saw, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it got to $20 million, judging by what's going on in the country, you know?
Yeah.
Just like the Washington, D.C., put a pile of money out there, $1 million bills or billions. Everybody's out to grab it. They think they're going to do infrastructure, highways, bridges, sewers, and all that stuff. There's only so many people to do the work, so what are they going to do with that big pile of money? They're just going to give it away. Honestly, I mean, it's sad, really, the way things are going. It's a bad deal. I mean, because right now, there's not a contractor in the country you can talk to that wouldn't want to hire some experienced people. The more they can hire, the more work they can get done, because the work's there. It's just the people aren't there to do the work. No, and anybody that gets the job, the contractors, I'm referring to most of the contractors, anybody that gets that job is going to make a pile of money. I wish I was still a contractor. I really do, because it's unlimited what a contractor can make and going into the next 5 years. I mean, it's good for the contractor, but it's not good for the taxpayer. You know, I mean, I'm talking about the federal money.
So if we come back with a, say it costs $15 million, do we negotiate with you then? Do we tell you that, or how does that work?
So you'll tell me, and I'll get it to our folks at our national office and let them process it.
Okay.
So they'll do the math, they'll do the calculations, you'll submit your supporting documentation, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
So I don't think, I would not get held up necessarily on the exact number at this point. It's basically we're trying to decide if it's something that you're willing to do. If we move forward, this is what it's going to cost, and let the government decide from that point which way they want to go. But that's kind of why we upped the per diem in the first place, mm-hmm. so you can kind of look at this fact-finding mission and decide what's good for you all and what's good for us as well as a mutual agreement.
And we really appreciate that. Thank you. That was a good faith effort on your, you know, to help us go through this process. Thank you.
Thank you mm-hmm. very much.
Yeah, thank you. All right, anything else?
I have a question. Kevin Rody.
Yep.
If we take away the federal income, what is the cost difference per month? What are we looking at?
$50,000
negative.
$50,000, about $50,000 per month.
That we're ahead.
That's what we're getting. I can't say ahead, but that's what we're getting.
If we lose that federal money,
right?
What's the county look like? Because I know we were running into some financial issues years ago before this money. Are we going to be looking at that same boat if we don't follow through with this and we lose this?
Yeah.
Are we going to be looking at that again in 3 years?
I can't even think of cash flow in the budget without that $700,000 in there.
So this is critical. This is a critical need to the county, and we're willing to just. I mean, I know we're doing a lot of discussion here. I've heard a lot of the same questions asked about many times. I guess, what is our plan if we don't have this federal money coming in to stop us from going broke and having to fire employees anyways?
I guess I'm not so sure. I mean, to me it looks like you have to have 55. If it's totally full, Kevin, totally full.
No, I'm asking, what happens if we lose...
Oh, lose what we got now, yeah.
What is the plan?
That might be a risk.
Us from having to fire employees anyways. Mm-hmm. The Troy's talking about is having to tell these people to fire. We're not going to have money anyway. I mean, I'm just asking, what are we going to be okay if we lose this money?
Mm-hmm. Now.
Well, that's a good question. And honestly, I was really hoping we could come up with some economic development with and some TIFs rolling off and things like that. That's, you know, we've got quite a bit of TIFs running right now.
What's the next TIF coming off the books?
We had one come off in Jackson. The ethanol plant just came off this year.
Well, it's not off.
Oh, it's not off this year?
Well, it's supposed to be, but they haven't signed off.
They, okay. I know made a significant difference in our area.
But they keep adding them. Every year they add them.
Kevin, I think the quick answer to your question, unfortunately, is any inheritance on we have, any inheritance money, we'd have to use that to balance our budget going forward.
Like we had to do in the past.
Right.
We do not have this money.
And it's going away.
Right, and that's so that's the reality of it is that's what we'd have to do next year.
So we don't have this. We are looking at dire financial problems once again.
Oh, I don't want to be dire, but it won't be pretty. Well, it won't be pretty.
If we're running in the negative, I consider that a dire problem.
Right. I don't know how much is in the inheritance now.
A million.
Million, so we got $1 million in the bank.
Okay. So a year?
A month and a half.
You mean it's
a year and a half.
A month and a half.
$1 million?
Yeah. $700,000 a month. To run the county claims.
Oh, I know, but I mean
so anyway,
total revenue off the jail is $700,000 a year, $500,000 a year. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, we all know building infrastructure and improving businesses, we all know it happens. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to build where the infrastructure is, which is within the city limits. And it's happened. It's happened in the past. It's going to happen in the future. I'm concerned about where we're going to be here 5 years from now.
Thank you, Kev. That's a good question. Thank you. Thank you.
It's only 30 to 36 months, but that's a lot better than a month and a half of what we're looking at before we start to run in.
Well, actually, I think when we originally built the budget for this year, we didn't have the sheriff's money in there because we were concerned. We had that concern initially, actually. And we built a budget around that, but then we added it back.
We had the COVID.
Yeah, we added it back in.
We had the COVID money.
Yeah.
But we did have a budget built around not having that revenue at one point.
For one year.
Yeah.
And it balanced.
Yeah.
You didn't need it. Mm-hmm. And
that was
with COVID money.
That was right. With some COVID
money.
COVID money every year.
Right, exactly. Right.
But we had a loss of revenue too, didn't we, from the COVID? Mm-hmm. We figured.
What was the question, Troy, or what you say?
We had a loss of money from the COVID too. Mm-hmm.
The revenue.
The revenue. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Loss. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. The revenue was down.
But we, like I said, we did. It was tight, but we did figure out how we could balance the budget without layoffs. It'd be nice, but it'd also be it'd be nice if we could increase our tax revenue without having to put more people in jail.
I guess that's one of my biggest questions. When have we ever been able to increase the tax revenue in Dakota County in the rural area where we're going to get sales tax? It doesn't happen because. Nobody's going to build in the county, in the rural where the county will get the sales tax. You're going to go where you can get tipped. It doesn't make any sense to go into the county. When's the last time a significant business opened up in rural Dakota County? Can anybody answer? I can't think of one. 11 years I've been here.
And that's where we need economic development.
And I agree with you, but you're talking years down the road. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just would hope that maybe we need to have a committee about but I would not want to, currently, when he says the IGAs, we have it. Mm-hmm. Nobody else, Woodbury doesn't have it. We have it. Mm-hmm. They can build away all they want, but we have it. Mm-hmm. So they want to renegotiate with us. Mm-hmm. We should keep that on the table because we keep it at the $80 an inmate, and they're going to keep their inmates and keep us happy. But, I mean, we can't negotiate forever. But I think we should think about it, try to get a more hard, concrete number. They want to pay for it. And they're doing that in good faith. They're paying for our jail because they want to use it for the next 10 years. And like I said, they got 100 to 125 prisoners a day in the First Sioux City. We have 100, if we build 110 and 15-bed facility, guess where they're going to drop those little IGAs that they have with these other little counties, and they're going to put them all here.
They're going to use their termination clauses.
You're right, they are. but they invested in us, and they don't have anything invested in them. They didn't pay those guys $150.
Yeah, yeah, they don't know.
Well, we can maybe crank. You're right. We have the numbers we need to crank
yeah.
up. And we
I
need
mean,
to,
I think we need yeah. to get a mm-hmm. more yeah. concrete
right.
number for the construction.
Crank the numbers.
So we can
look at the budgets, absolutely.
Yeah.
A very good point.
How are you going to get that construction
dollar amount
that they're asking for? You talk about good faith. Yeah. You guys did not show good faith in not hiring.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about we? That was what
I don't think
to get
you're
that
ever
going to
get a total cost until you uh-huh. put that in front of contractors and have them bid the project, and you'll find out what the cost is.
So is that
they
what
guaranteed it? That they
you can't, there's no such thing
okay,
as a guarantee.
Is that what the construction management company does? Is put out the bids? Is that mm-hmm. I mean?
A good example is Woodbury County started out 40 million, 60 now. So
I agree, but we're behind Woodbury County as far as we know that the costs went up. So our number we get today would be better than the number they got 2 years ago when they started building.
There's
correct?
A possibility.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it's been taken into consideration, the increase in everything.
Okay, but how do we get to that point? That's my question.
I thought that the first initial amount of money, we were going to get an estimate for what it was going to cost.
That's what I thought, too.
But now it's going to cost us a lot more money, I think, to get that.
Yeah.
That's my question. What's it going to cost to get it?
13. Yeah. When we got an estimate, this was October 28th, it was $13,538,000 was the high range.
Can we give them that number? Is that what they're looking for?
It's not.
Ron, are you still on the call?
I don't see him up there anymore.
But that doesn't include the dirt work, the thing that we just got, those core samples. Those are the things.
It doesn't say not to exceed.
Right, it does not. This is the high range.
See?
Right.
The high range.
12.5 to 13.5 million.
Well,
and the not to exceed was going to come from the construction manager.
The next thing you know, it's 20 million.
Larry, how do you get to that point? I'm asking.
You
I don't know.
Anything. You get the architect to draw up a plan that you guys should have a plan right there someplace. And
I have what they have done so far.
I know, but I'm talking about the plan that was used 10, 15 years ago.
Well, we have that.
Okay, and yeah. then you put that on paper, you put that out to contract, and say, what's going to cost us to do this addition?
Maybe Larry should have a committee. Maybe.
A few adjustments that have to be made because the electrical and he was talking about that, some electrical and some high back, because it might be outdated. Well, then we got the letter back from the state and everything is hunky-dory. As far as going forward with it, the jail is up to standards.
So basically, you got to put the bids out for the contractor.
But the contractors, yeah.
So just more about construction than I do. My question is, from where we're at now to get to that point, what do we have to have the architect or a general contractor or a construction management?
For $1.2 million, they'll come up with a set of plans with the electrical, mechanical, and the high back and the structure
yeah.
and the cells for $1.2 million, I think, is what their total package
yeah.
what their total package was. Well, to me, that's an awful lot of money.
But isn't it in increments the way they're doing it? My question is I don't know the answer to this, what's it take for here to get to the bid process?
Yeah.
Well, I sure wouldn't want to start out and put some footings in out there.
No, I'm saying the
our
bid
COE person just left.
Got those hard numbers.
Well, you got a set of plans that tells you all the way through. As a general contractor, you take that plan to the electrical contractor or a number of them.
Can we?
And then you go to the IVAC people and the insulator. And then they come up with a
Do we need to make a committee maybe to talk about where we're, you know, get these new questions back there and then talk to Ron, the architect, or even the budget? I mean, like I said,
I think that'd be a good idea.
Rather than, I mean, this is, we've taken a lot of time. I'm not sure our BOE person's still here. Yeah, would it be Larry and, I don't know, That's where I'm at. I mean, I'm
open to anything.
My honest opinion is I feel like it's irresponsible to move forward with a project that really seems to be that expensive. And I mean, I'm a taxpayer both as a federal and at a state and a county level.
We all are.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems like a lot of risk. You know,
there's no risk.
If they would front the money, it would be no risk.
There's no risk.
Right.
There's no risk. They said they would negotiate with us. Whatever it took to build it, they would pay it. There's no risk.
Okay. So what risk is involved?
They didn't say for sure they'd pay for it.
That, like, the termination.
The 30 months is guaranteed money. That's guaranteed.
It's after that, yeah.
Yeah, they just got to plug the numbers.
It's the 10 years that's not guaranteed.
Yeah.
We have to have or if they use 40 beds, they pay for 40 beds. If they use 80, they pay for 80. Mm-hmm. But the 30 months to pay the loan back is guaranteed.
Or 32, or 36.
Or 36. Mm-hmm. Whatever the number needs to get to
is
the...
Is that not what you understood?
That's exactly what I understood.
Now, the contract says the lesser of 30 months. That's
okay,
the max.
If they say
the contract, but maybe they're going to change the contract.
If it's paid off in 28 mm-hmm. months, then it stops. Mm-hmm. If it takes 36 months, it goes to where the loan's paid off. So
I think 30 months was the longest. The max.
30 is what it's sitting at right now. 30 covered the 12, the high number. It's going to have to go to, if it went to 36 months, it covered it'd be $13.77 million. Dollars. So that would cover the current, the number, hard number we have now. For whatever that's worth.
Any other questions, or should we? Yep, Marcy.
I just have a comment. Mm-hmm. I've been tuning into these meetings for many months, and mm-hmm. they've been very educational, and I truly appreciate your discussion mm-hmm. and your comments. And, we just got our tax bill, and I just think sometimes you have to move forward with courage and faith. And I've sat in when we've been discussing wages for the deputy and the sheriff and the county attorney. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where all that went, mm-hmm. how that all transpired. But when you put your head in a hole, you're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I think you have more information than I would ever look at. Mm-hmm. And I just think sometimes you have to take, I'll repeat it, a step forward takes a little risk, calculated risk, and do it with faith and be positive about it. And don't put it on a slow burner. I think you need to take some action quickly because this has been going on for at least, 2 years?
No, August, late August. September, October.
It's brought to the board,
yeah.
Yeah. But the sheriff's been talking to him for.
Right.
Oh, I see.
Before, I believe, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I'm glad I don't have to make that decision. Mm-hmm. It's a burden. It's a burden. And that's why you were elected. And, like I said.
Thanks, Marcy. Yeah, good point. Appreciate your. Anybody else? Yeah, thank you, Marcy. All right.
Well, I just think in the near future, then we need to just get it, if we're not going to do it, we're not going to do it, but we need to get it back on the agenda next time we meet, and if it's no, it's no, and we move on mm-hmm. And let it go because, it's there's no point in asking for any more drawings or talking to contractors or anything like that if the answer is no.
That
might be a good idea.
Plan. I'd love to see that plan.
Right.
Didn't everybody get a role?
All that worthless thing, that is absolutely worthless. But, honestly, I can't explain to you how worthless that is. You couldn't build nothing with that thing.
Yeah.
The we're talking about is this big.
Put it on the agenda, too.
Not thick. Because I think about four phases of it.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think the feds answered the questions that they mm-hmm. can answer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was good.
And I think it still boils down to and everybody has their own opinion, mm-hmm. but it still boils down to yes, no. If you're not comfortable with it,
mm-hmm.
vote no. Yeah. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I do care, but that's mm-hmm. fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine. We need to move on.
Okay.
Good thinking.
Let's get good idea.
We can't today, but
put it on the agenda for
before we go to doing a committee that Larry's going to head up and mm-hmm. buy everybody lunch and
oh, I want to be on that committee.
All right. All right, let's do that. Let's put our questions together, and if, you know, if you want to seek out information from
Tim. Yeah, if you have any more questions, please let me know. You guys all have my phone number
and
email.
Budgets.
I can get more answers.
Joan has budgets.
Do you want a public hearing?
A public hearing? Maybe a public hearing would be a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, are you going to listen if everybody's...
Yeah, maybe just have a public hearing for...
I mean, it has to be
special.
It should be as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be before our next meeting.
Can we do that?
Let's do that.
Okay.
Schedule a public hearing, and then we'll vote on it after that.
Okay.
At the next meeting. Sound all right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's do it. I think you're right. We've been back and forth on this for a couple of months. Yeah. All right.
So when do you think you'll do the public hearing?
As soon as I can get it advertised.
Yeah, we have to put it in the paper.
How long does it take?
So like right after the new year? Or?
Our next meeting is actually the end of the year.
27.
Do you think with Christmas and everything that you'll get much turnout if you have it between then and now? Or?
I think it'd probably be better if it was after the first of the year, but... Just because people are, because I won't be here if you're having it. Just I mean, I have to take a vacation.
The 27th, yeah.
Can't we do it next week?
Yeah.
The 20th, week before?
Why can't we do it next week?
I don't know how many.
I don't think that's enough notice for the public.
No?
No, I don't.
How about the 1st in January? The 4th of January? Because our next meeting is the 11th then.
Yeah.
4th of January and the 11th is our... Yeah.
And what is that? What date is that?
Monday.
Monday.
January means 10th.
Oh, I'm looking at it wrong. I'm looking at it wrong. Yeah, 3rd. 3rd.
Yeah.
3rd. The 10th. You're right. Good catch. Yeah.
Maybe January...
5th or 3rd, 4th, 5th. When are those dates? Whatever works for the people. But that would be a good thing.
We'll shoot for Wednesday.
Wednesday the 5th? Then we'll have 5 days. Good idea. Thank you for your great ideas. All right. Item D, discussion regarding implementation of a policy on cooperation and volunteering.
Let's just do that for the next agenda.
Okay, save D for next time. Good idea, Joan. Another good idea. Another good idea. Commissioner committee reports.
I just want to do a salary resolution.
We can move that to the next agenda.
Do we want to?
Yeah, I would like to.
Move that to the next agenda. I think we need a committee to sit down and look at that one, because they're actually booked from
like
NACO.
Like the budget committee?
Yeah, like the budget committee. And maybe some of the elected officials, yeah, to look at that. Yeah, I think that would be a good one to look at. I'd be willing to do
that. That doesn't
committee.
Have to be set until January.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Item E or D? Okay, so we're going to table item D, put it on next agenda. Volunteer emergency, and then the elected officials' salaries. Do we need a committee for that? Budget committee? Okay. And then we need some representation. Maybe we can put a thing out to the elected officials and see if they want to sit on it too. Okay, a few of those. Okay. And we'll set that between now and the next meeting. All right, commissioner committee reports.
Carney was fun. I learned a lot.
It was
nice. It was really nice talking to other board members.
Let's see. There was a good Simcoe meeting that I was at that talked about rural shrink initiative, child care issues, and actually they were using TIFs for child care in Iowa. Which is kind of amazing.
That's the tri-state legislature.
Yeah, yeah. TIF money for child care, which kind of makes sense. That's economic development. And then they were talking about 3D houses. It's a long ways away from coming here, but it is a neat concept, 3D houses, built with 3D. Anything else? Okay. Mail and emergency business?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll adjourn this meeting, and I'll hand this over to Troy to call the BOE meeting together.
Joan, can you picture you with your board?
Did something? Did you want Chris's card?
Yes.
Did you get the email?
Yeah,
I think I had like 10.
What?
10,000.
The colored thing? Different colors.
What are you?
That's what you get for.
You can borrow from Scott.
No, I handed it out when I walked up here. Oh. I think I bought 6 or 7.
This one. I just put a bunch of marks on mine.
I know, I wrote all over mine.
Yeah. Well, not me, the newspaper one, but I'll get you one.
Yeah, you can have it. Mm-hmm. No, I was listening.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, guys.
You look great. You look great. You look like a winner.
Let's have you stand one right here. All right, here we go. One more just in case I've left. okay, super. Thank you.
All right. He's asking about the public meeting for that. What day is it going to be on?
January 5.
And then vote at meeting on
January
10th.
Got it. Is there a way the Board of Equalization meeting should be heard yet?
I know.
It's a concert.
Yeah.
Okay. Troy's really fast.
Yeah.
So I'm just asking, is there a way for future that to be moved?
Did we do those first?
Yeah.
That's our reorg meeting in January. If you want to change the time and date, that's what we do.
And it does say 3:30, but you're right. I mean, we never get there. It's my fault. Sorry.
Okay. Let's call the meeting to order. We already did the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call.
Troy Lonsby.
Here.
Janet Gill.
Here.
Scott Love is absent. Robert Giese.
Here.
Larry Albanese.
Here.
Current copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted at the West Wall near the entrance of the County Board meeting room and is available for review by all citizens in attendance. Dakota County Board of Equalization reserves the right to adjust the order of items in the agenda if necessary. Number one is the consent agenda. A, approval of previous minutes from November 15, 2021.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Janet?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes. New business. A, Christy Ops, assessor requesting approval for cast list corrections.
Okay, 9929 was a in lieu of tax that I did not get off the tax roll because some of the community development property. So that was that. They're going to pay it just in lieu of tax. 9930, she passed away before the deadline, so we had to take the homestead away. 9931 through 37 are all homestead exemption audit corrections that they sent me on Friday that I had to do. They either didn't tell the truth about their income or something, but they all got reductions. So they owe us some money.
So they all came, these reductions came from the state?
Yes. Everything came from the state. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Does anybody ever get an increase in their homestead exemption?
Yep. Really? Some of them do.
I'll be done. You will never hear about those.
No, very often.
Last time.
Yeah, the last time we did. Yes, we did.
Do we need a motion?
Yes.
I think on the first two we do. The rest of them, no.
We can approve
them. I'll make a motion to approve Christie's tax list correction.
I'll second it.
Robert?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Okay, we'll move on to B, hearing for Salvation Army application for exemption from motor vehicle taxes by qualifying nonprofit organizations for 2007 Ram Ben 3D7KS28D07G844508. The Salvation Army vehicles are used to transport clients. Cargo personnel application comes from recommendation and approval by Don Bosquet, Treasurer, 63185 and 63189. Board to consider the recommendation of the County Treasurer and other information that may obtain and shall approve or deny the exemption of basis law and rules and regulations adopted, promulgated by the Tax Commissioner, 77-2021.
Pretty standard issue, right, yep. Don?
Ram.
Move to approve.
Yep.
Or grant.
Grant the exemption.
Grant exemption.
I'll second that. Or with a hearing. Do we have to do anything for a hearing?
It's not an open hearing where we open and close it. It's okay. Larry?
Yes.
Troy?
Yes.
Janet?
Yep.
Robert?
Yes.
Three, mail and or emergency business.
None.
Four, public comment. Does anybody have any public comment? At five, we're going to adjourn.
All right. Well, you are fast. You're very good. You're very good.
The
numbers start flying out.
I take yours. I am sorry.